Chapter 11.
Many things confused Tiklok. He didn't understand the order of courses at High Table. For a long time, he'd gotten lost in the palace's corridors and couldn't figure out which staircase or which entrances to use. He never understood why gentry and servants alike made such a fuss about precedence whenever they lined up, and he could never puzzle out where he should stand. But one thing he was certain of. Nargis had anointed him as her agent some years ago. He still thought of the spirit as her, even though Nargis had told him spirits weren't women and they weren't men. They had no hands or feet or bodies, so they couldn't be male or female. And because they had no hands, they needed people like him to work for them. Nargis asked him to do little commissions for her. It.
But why do you choose me?
Tiklok had asked, as drops of fountain water dribbled into the ticklish places in front of and behind his ears.
Thou art faithful and humble,
said the voice in his head, a voice that was low-pitched for a woman or high-pitched for a man, and which, at any rate, did not sound human. Tiklok hoped he was faithful and humble, but he knew he was also clumsy, cautious, and not as clever as other people. Being Nargis's agent didn't make him graceful or smart or grant him any magic powers. Nonetheless, he did whatever the spirit asked with a willing heart. Only two others had any claim upon that heart. The first was Queen Cressa. Tiklok couldn't recall how old he'd been when the queen altered the stream of his life. He had started to stretch out, but he had yet to sprout any beard. His father, a butcher by trade, had been beating him again. This time Tiklok's misdeed had been allowing a bloody hind quarter of calf to slip from his grasp to the dirty street as he fetched it from the cart to their stall. This beating might not have been worse than the countless previous ones, but since it took place in the central market, a considerable crowd had gathered to watch. One of the queen's shield had grabbed his father's meat hook as it swung high in the air for the next blow. In the stillness that descended, the queen, mounted on her magnificent black horse, had said in a cold voice, "Who is responsible for this lad?"
"Your Majesty," said his father, doffing his cap and falling on his knees. "He's my dolce of apprentice, always fumble-fingered. Look what he's gone and done."
"Not any longer," said Queen Cressa. "I find I need another page. Bristle, pay the man 2 catamount coins for the boy's indenture. Then take him to the fountain to wash his wounds and see if Nargis will ease his hurts."
Sergeant Bristle had put his arm around Tiklok and half carried him the few blocks to the courtyard of the Star. He liberally splashed water on his face and borrowed a cup for him to drink Nargis water. The fountain had instantly eased his agony, but it did not erase the scars and misshapen bones that already studded his body, nor close up the triangular rent just torn by the meat hook through his cheek. Though the wound healed with neat edges, ever after Tiklok's speech and eating were damaged. But the queen had ordered that he be treated kindly, so Tiklok's life started over with clean uniforms, light jobs, warm rooms, and without constant terror. A few of his fellow servants taunted and bullied him, but since Tiklok grew tall and broad, and since he never reacted to their teasing, which really scarcely bothered him compared to his own father's brutality, they gave up their sport. Whenever Tiklok had free time, he would return to the fountain to thank Nargis for his rescue. And one day, the spirit chose him by anointing him with a spray of water. Chose him, just as he was. When he grew too old to be a page, Chamberlain Teonora promoted him to lackey. As a lackey, his uniform was of coarse canvas, though still warmer and more comfortable than anything he'd owned as a butcher's boy. He never served at table or helped guests, but he did many behind-the-scenes chores. The other person who owned his heart was Kilty, a scullery maid with a merry laugh. Kilty, who had pox scars all over her chest, said that Ticklock's disfigurement didn't bother her, and she let him kiss her. And then she let him do more. Ticklock felt that lying with Kilty was a more glorious prize than he'd ever expected out of life. Kilty had ambition. She wanted to be promoted as a cook someday, and to rise she needed to read recipes. So in their free hours, whenever they weren't sneaking away to an unused attic with a straw mattress, Kilty and Ticklock would practice their letters on the big scrubbed table in the servants' common room. If Cook Bessie or the head baker Borter chanced by, they would correct Ticklock's and Kilty's mistakes and give them a new cookery word to learn. Ticklock dutifully copied down custard or boil, but he preferred the 8-page chapbook of nursery rhymes that tutor Wrighton lent them. He had the Water's Choice by heart. All the while, Nargis spoke to him intermittently. He performed tasks as the spirit instructed, without question, and as well as he could. One of his first orders had been to take over preparation and delivery of Chamberlain Teonora's afternoon tisane. The undercook who handled this task previously had been puzzled, angry and resistant, but Ticklock insisted, "This is my job now." Lord Retzel's man even spoke to him about this, but Ticklock would not budge, and in the end they all gave up and let him do it. When he took the sick lady her tray, sometimes he tried to learn more about how the world worked. Teonora, after all, had many years of wisdom. One time he asked her, "Is Nargis the only spirit?" "No, boy, but Nargis is the spirit that cares about Whirrendale." "How many other spirits are there?" he asked, pouring out a steaming cup.
"7, though some say 8.
"And they care about other countries, far away?"
"That's right."
Teonora took a long sip.
"Do spirits have people who work for them?"
"Do you mean like the sorrowers who lead church services and help the afflicted? Priests and the like?"
"No, I mean regular people the spirits talk to."
"Lots of people talk to spirits, Ticklock. Just go to the fountain in the courtyard and you'll see scores of folk begging Nargis for aid. But I don't know of anybody that the spirit ever replied to. The waters know I've asked about my tumours many a time and received silence as an answer. Spirits don't have to explain their doings to people. Nargis provides us the waters of life. That's enough."
Ticklock pondered this information, but in the meantime, Nargis told him to keep his eyes open. At first, Ticklock found this perplexing, because he hadn't actually been walking around his days with his eyes shut. But now he noticed so much more. He saw Teonora slump over with pain when she thought no one was about. He saw Councillor Presian stroke Gisilla's cheek. He saw Lady Denista pull a ruby bracelet hidden under her sleeve out and turn it admiringly. He saw the Lord Steward's man Heathclaw and the Treasurer's clerks working on account books in the late hours of the night. And more than once, he saw Lady Tenny walking alone in the garden, worrying a kerchief so hard he thought it would tear in two. He told Nargis all these things, though he didn't understand what they meant. Some moons ago, Nargis had ordered him to patrol the corridor outside of the royal library all night with a broom. If anyone came, he should say maids reported a mouse nest and Teonora assigned him to watch for the varmints. Twice that week, Ticklock saw men whom he suspected worked for Lord Matwick casually strolling down the hallway in the wee hours. He didn't know what devilment they could be up to, but when they saw him, they hurried away. He was awful glad they had not questioned him. He didn't know how well he could lie. A few weeks ago, Nargis had told him to gather acorns from the grounds and boil the nuts to make a dark brown liquid in a kitchen pot. Today, he had looked at the naked bodies in the courtyard in fury and disgust. Nargis bid him leave a note under a pitcher of ale he took to the shield's duty room. This afternoon, the spirit had instructed him to locate a jug of coal tar in the kennel master's cupboard. Then he'd obtained some bergamot oil by telling Kilty that Teonora had a craving for the spice to flavour her tisane. Pilfering a good bottle with a strong stopper from the healer's shelves presented no difficulty for a lackey whose duties took him all about without anybody paying him the slightest mind. The scariest part of his orders involved getting the bottled mixture into the Queen's bedchamber, because her special guards were quite jumpy after the attack. Ticklock didn't think of himself as possessing any guile or smarts, but the solution lay easily within his grasp. Shield Yanneth, his face strained with fatigue, stood on duty.
"Hey, Yanneth," said Ticklock,
though the th sound came out with a horrible hiss.
"Brought more wood to build up the fire. Gonna be a cold one tonight."
"Fine, Ticklock. Platsy's in there straightening up, but herself is not."
Ticklock nodded. He built up the fire in the reception room first, taking his time, stacking extra wood painstakingly while listening to Platsy move around in the bedroom. When she came out and smiled at the warmth he'd created, he pulled his cap at her and ducked into the interior chamber. More quickly, he added logs to the fireplace there. His glance fell upon the Queen's dressing table.
"Nargis, you'll tell me if this is wrong."
He carefully took the bottle out of his wood basket and set it on top of the note behind a hairbrush. Then he left the bedroom. He was leaving the outer room when Platsy stopped him. "Ticklock!" He shied. Luckily, everyone was accustomed to his strange mannerisms.
"If you see Gisilla, would you tell her to get her ass up here? She's on duty next and I'm tired of covering up for her lateness."
Ticklock nodded and pulled his cap to Platsy and Yanneth. As he strode down the hall, he pondered why his heart raced so. He whispered,
"I've got nothing to be scared about. I belong to Nargis, Queen Cressa and Kilty."
And he would gladly sacrifice this mangled body for any one of them.